I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. From the blare of an ambulance to the constant beep, beep, beep of the heart monitor and the jarring noises of alarms going off, the sounds of emergency medicine and hospital care are both familiar and relentless. And we are learning that these sounds can be stressful, not conducive to the health of patients and hospital staff. In the case of alarms, it can lead to something called alarm fatigue for doctors and nurses, since apparently most of these sounds are not a matter of life and death. Now there are calls to rethink how hospitals sound, the soundtrack of hospitals, and redesign them to create a more human and humane sound environment. We have two guests who have joined us on Radio Times. Here in our Philadelphia studios, Dr. Bon Ku. He is a director of the Health Design Lab at Thomas Jefferson University, where he's also an ER physician, and he teaches future physicians to apply human-centered design to healthcare challenges. Bon Ku, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thrilled to be here.
Also with us and joining us by telephone is Danny Van, Executive Vice President, Creative and Lead Producer at Man Made Music, and that's a Global Sonic Studio. And Danny Van, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much. Thrilled to be here.
Nice to have you both with us. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And I have a particular interest in this because I'm on the radio and it's all about sound. That's the world that I live in. But let me start with you, Bon Ku. How important is sound to good design when we think of hospitals?
We've recently been thinking about sound as a design medium that, I work in a busy, chaotic emergency room here in Philadelphia, and it's like many emergency rooms across the nation where the noise can be so loud, it can be as high as 70 decibels. So that's like
That's loud.
So that's like standing next to a vacuum cleaner trying to have a conversation. And there's been studies done where in hospitals, that sound can increase as high as 100 decibels. And that's the sound of a chainsaw. So I own a chainsaw, actually. And that is extremely loud. And so in my career as a physician working in hospitals, I think I've suffered from this acoustic trauma of the noise of hospitals. And what concerns me most is that bad sound design can lead to worse patient outcomes because they can't recover and heal. And also, bad sound design can be a distraction for us who work in healthcare. Medical errors are the third leading cause of death in the U.S. And if you're a distracted physician or nurse, you're going to make an error.
I want to pick up on all that. We also need to talk about the impact of sound on patients. Danny Van, I'm just curious about your particular interest in hospital sounds. I know you've worked for AT&T and HBO and the Super Bowl, and you have done sound design for Nissan as well. But what is your particular interest in hospital sounds?
What's our particular interest is making an impact on people's lives. It's something that we realize as we've got into some of the work that we've done for branding, where suddenly we start realizing that our sounds are everywhere. You know, you walk through an airport and I hear music that we've worked on. I hear somebody's phone ring. I hear music that we've worked on. I go into a space that we've done sound for. Let's say we've done sound for a stadium, or we've done sound for a retail store or a lobby of a building, and you start realizing all the impact, the emotional impact that you're having on people's day-to-day life. And Joel, our founder at Manmade, started talking about this term a while ago called sonic humanism. Hmm. And it's really sort of been like a rallying point for us about how sound and music, how can it make your lives richer and simpler? And when we look at the problems like Dr. Ku is talking about, we think we're particularly equipped to make some sort of difference.
Well, in fact, let me play two sounds. We'll begin with hospital sounds, beginning with the sound of an ambulance. And we'll listen to that. It's a very familiar sound. Mm-hmm. And then we'll hear man-made music sound design for a hospital. So let's begin with before. All right. right. That sounds very familiar, I think, to most people. And now let's listen to man-made music's sound design concept of a hospital using harmonious tones instead of traditional alarms.
Mm-hmm.
Janice?
Yes, doctor?
You sent it to the lab and asked him to get it to me.
Yes, sir.
So, Danny, let me go to you. I feel like I've been taken to outer space somewhere. What's the thinking behind that sound?
Well, we were thinking a few things. One is we have to imagine a world that doesn't exist yet or a situation that we can hope to move towards in terms of there has to be a lot of elements we need to be in place to get to this level in terms of you have to take care of all what we call the sonic trash. We have to take care of the ambient noises that you hear. And so that's part of that's going to be through the physical design of spaces. How do you minimize noise? How do you make the walls less reflective of sound, right? So you immediately can have a more calming effect. But then the music and the tones that you're hearing is imagining that the machines and the devices can speak a similar language, and therefore the tones have relationship to each other. So I can still get information from a machine that could be beeping, but if I know that it's a dissonant sound, right, something that's harsh, or one that's less harsh, or one that's even harmonious, it can tell me real information about what the device is trying to communicate. So we're making a few leaps of our imagination to get to a place. But for contrast, I think it's pretty obvious that, where we are right now is not sustainable. And there is a way for us to utilize the relationship of music and healing to create some sort of environment that would be more conducive.
Bunku, let me go back to you. First of all, our hospitals, are they just getting louder than they used to be?
They are absolutely getting louder because we have all these great new monitoring devices and technology. But the repercussions of that is that these machines, these monitoring devices, they do not communicate with each other. So they're all competing with shrieks and shrills, trying to get the attention of the healthcare provider. So in my career, I've seen these the sound environment of hospitals getting increasingly louder in my daily practice.
Well, and it does raise the questions. I mean, it seems to me that some sounds are more necessary than others. I mean, there are certain things that doctors and nurses and medical staff need to hear in order to understand the environment that they're working in.
Correct. And when we think about monitoring devices, I would love for if a patient is having a dangerous cardiac rhythm, for example, like ventricular tachycardia, that by the sound, I would not even need to look at the monitor, and that I will, just from that sound, that I know exactly what that rhythm was. I could go to the patient room. But what happens now is when I work in the emergency room, about 85% of those sounds I do not need to act upon. So we suffer from this concept called alarm fatigue, where we just ignore alarms all the time. And what concerns me is that, am I going to ignore an alarm that I actually need to act upon?
Well, which raises a question about why most then alarms are not really alarming, but also the fact that when something is a false alarm, over time, one as a human being just begins to not react to the sound because it doesn't tell you what you need to know.
Yeah. We become desensitized.
Desensitized, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Do you want to weigh in on that, Donnie?
Well, I think what's interesting is that the airline industry has done this years ago. I wouldn't say the cockpit of an airplane sounds as harmonious as our little example there. But the cockpit of any commercial airliner, the sounds are exactly the same no matter where it's manufactured, no matter what country it's in, even no matter what language the pilots speak. And so if you go into an airline cockpit, the sounds are going to be the same. And that allows the pilots to get familiarized with the warnings and the alerts. And when you think about it, that's a no-brainer that you would need to have that level of intuitiveness and responsiveness in a cockpit. There are warnings that do come on occasionally of a spoken voice. It's in English, but it's going to say the most severe, warning, like
right.
pull up. And there's a simplicity to that idea of unifying the sounds and having the same no matter where you are. And I think what Dr. Koo is talking about would be similar to that approach.
Well, that's interesting to think of a kind of universal, not only just sort of lowering the sound level, but figuring out a universal language for hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
You want to speak to that, Bangku?
Right.
Yep, because when we talk about sound, it's just not turning down the volume, turning down the decibels, which, of course, it's needed. But then it's also how do you redesign that soundscape so there's actually a language around it? Because what happens in my current workflow is there's an alarm that goes on. I don't know what's alarming, so it requires me to break my current train of thought and to go figure out what that monitor is telling me. And so there's two actions right there. And what I'm just concerned about is just getting distracted so much by the sound. And it would be great if there was a universality to the language of hospital soundtracks.
And it sounds even just figuring out what is worth an alarm and what is not.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. And in design, we have this thing called analogous inspiration, where we look at other industries like the airline industry or other products to get inspired to redesign what our current environments are like. And so I think of my smartphone, my cell phone. That's so much better designed than the billion-dollar hospitals that we work in, where, you know, first thing I do when I get a new phone is I turn off the alerts for my mail messages. And because, like many of us, we get dozens of emails all day long, and I don't want to be distracted during the daytime. But then I also personalize the message tones and rings for those people when they alert me that I need to act upon right away. And for example, my 13-year-old daughter, when she texts me, I need to act upon that right away, or I'm going to hear from it when I get back home.
But you don't hear robots calling your
correct,
email address.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to, and we're almost up in a break here, but just it's important to also talk about patients. I mean, these are the ones in getting care and treatment in the hospital. And Bangku, if I can go back to you, if medical staff are sort of bathed in all this sound and some of it alarming, I would assume for patients there is that same kind of startle or fight or flight response if you hear an alarm go off.
Exactly. When I heard that initial hospital soundtrack, I got a little stressed out because I got to go work in the emergency room later today. And it is a flight or fight sensation that you have. And for patients, I feel terrible for them because the most important factor for them to recover from the acute illness is getting rest. And so not only do we have light disruptions, we have sound disruptions when it's so loud that if patients can't rest, they can't heal.
And even if it's not your body that's sending off the alarm, but someone else down the hall, you still hear it.
Correct.
Well, let's take that short break and we'll get back to our conversation talking about how to create a more healthy, humane, sound environment in hospitals. Dr. Bangku is with us. He's an ER physician and also a director of the Health Design Lab at Thomas Jefferson University here in Philadelphia. Denny Venn joining us by telephone, EVP, creative and lead producer at Man Made Music. And you can join our conversation 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. More conversation, more sounds after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Denny Venn and Bangku about healthcare, the sounds of healthcare, the future of healthcare sound, how to create a healthy sound environment in places like hospitals. And again, not got a lot of people that want to join our conversation. Let me just read a Facebook comment from Kaja, who said, I had an outpatient procedure about 10 months ago. Before they started, they asked what I'd like to listen to and then play my favorite band for the whole appointment. It was the first time I've experienced music as a part of a procedure. It really was an amazing experience, and you're nodding your head, Bangku.
That's amazing. It just warms my heart to hear that story. That by designing that sound environment, that patient had a better experience. Right.
And it could be customized as well, which
totally.
Is very cool.
Yeah.
Let me play a couple of sounds, and Denny Venn, I'll get you to respond to them. The first one is that very familiar sound of a Harley Davidson motorcycle engine, and you're going to hear it three times.
Cool.
I happen to love the sound of a Harley Davidson. Let's listen to the sound of
exactly.
Star Wars R2-D2. So, Denny, we had a chance to listen to that together. Why is that important? What do you hear in those sounds?
Well, what I like to do with those two sounds and a few other sounds is if I'm doing a workshop where we're talking about the power of sound and getting people to hear the world differently, I can play that Harley sound without, you know, I just say, you know, raise your hand if you recognize this sound. And pretty much in any room, several people, I'd immediately hear that Harley sound. You know, it's iconic. It's part of the brand. I believe they tried to, copyright protect that sound.
Oh, interesting.
But you have an emotional response to it, right? And you also understand something about the character and the personality and the quality of that machine, right? The what has been described as patata 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 patata, and like that throatiness and that chugginess that speaks to the engineering and the emotion behind that the motorcycle. You know, if it sounded differently, if it sounded like chicka chicka chicka, it wouldn't
be a Harley Davidson. Yes,
it wouldn't be a Harley Davidson, and it wouldn't have the same romance behind it. And the point about R2-D2, same thing, is that I'll play that sound and people immediately, you know, throw their hand up and they say, oh, it's R2-D2. Well, give me one word to describe R2-D2's personality. And actually, I'll ask you, Marty, give me one word to describe R2's personality.
Oh, playful.
Right. So, and that comes across immediately in the sounds of R2-D2. And if you are so when you're designing for products, you don't have a choice about a product's personality and value is going to be communicated through the sounds that it makes. So you can shortcut and skimp on the sounds of a device, and that's one of the major issues around medical devices, is it's cheaper and quicker and easier just to have it make a generic annoying sound. So you can skimp on that. But you're missing an opportunity to talk so much about what the machine does, what its personality should be, what its value should be, what its is it functioning correctly? And so it sounds like that you don't normally associate with character or value or things like that. It's very important in product design.
Well, let me go back to you, Banku, and even listening to those two sounds, and the idea is to humanize the sound, to make even, I would assume for hospital staff and even patients, a sound environment that feels comfortable, maybe not playful, but comfortable, mm-hmm. inviting, safe.
There's such an opportunity to do that. When I speak to patients in their patient rooms and I see, you know, if the cardiac monitor is going off, the oxygen saturation monitor goes off, then they immediately look to the monitor and they're stressed out. And I'm muting those alarms all the time because I say, hey, don't worry about that. It's not dangerous. And so we put these patients, they're already in a stressful environment. Mm-hmm. Then we put these noxious sounds in there that's stressing them out. And why do these sounds need to be so, alarming, lack of a better word?
Our hospitals, I mean, I realize this is sort of on the frontiers of hospital design. Do hospitals understand the consequence of sound, of the sound environment?
It's not new, this concept of alarm fatigue. It's been a decade-old problem. But I think we lack the knowledge or of like what do we do about it? Right. Because it seems like such a big problem, and I think there's a call for musicians and designers and patients and hospitals and companies to come together and really rethink the soundtrack of hospitals.
Mm. And it's interesting to use the word soundtrack. I mean, I think that's probably helpful for people to think about. Mm. Let me get, looks like Kat from Chester, PA to join us. And Kat, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Hi, Kat.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a busy nurse on a step-down unit in a kind of a lower economic hospital. My question is, how difficult would this be to implement with our current monitors and ventilators? Is this something where we would need to buy complete haul of the equipment, or is this something we could work with what we currently have?
Kat, let me just ask you a question. I mean, how much do you find the noise? Are you in a ER or in a regular hospital?
I'm in a step-down unit, so we get basically the patients that are not sick enough to be in ICU, but can't quite be on a normal med-surg floor. So they are pretty sick. We have tons of monitors, lots of noise constantly. I literally hear these alarms in my sleep.
You would hear them in your sleep. Yeah, because it just sort of works on the unconscious in a way. Kat, let me see what our guests have to say. And I wonder, Danny Venn, as a designer then, is there interest in hospitals to come up with some kind of better sound environment?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few ways into it. And I guess I think the easiest and cheapest and immediate solutions are ones that are probably right in front of you in terms of if the door is too loud, how can you put something so that it doesn't close with such a shock, or if the cabinets or things like that are simple to do with the physical space to muffle loud noises. That's fairly straightforward. The suggestion that someone made on Facebook about, or the story about playing music for a procedure, like that's right in front of us. And so adding sound that you know is going to be pleasing, or even masking, right? So if you have a simple speaker and you could connect it to a smartphone and even just play rain sounds, right? So white noise or the sound of a rainforest, $1.99 for a rainforest sound app can do a lot of good. Those solutions are immediate. They're affordable. The issue around changing the sounds in the devices, I think, is much more complicated. There was a lot of interest in a recent conference I went to around facilities and their guidelines. And there's always interest in how do you set new guidelines for facilities being built that would then influence things built in the next 10 years. And I think approaching that for devices, setting guidelines for how they're manufactured, how they're built, is how we're going to make the biggest impact. So to answer the caller's question, Not at the moment. It's very difficult to change the sounds on the devices. But there are other things you can do to maybe lean into the power of sound to make a better environment.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Danny Venn, EVP, creative and lead producer at Man Made Music, and that's a global sonic studio. And she's overseeing music production for clients like AT&T, HBO, and the Super Bowl. We're talking about the sound environments in hospitals and how to make that more human, more humane, more harmonious, and maybe even more healthy. And Dr. Bonku is an ER physician at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital here in Philadelphia, also director of the Health Design Lab at Jefferson, teaching future doctors to apply human-centered design to health care challenges. And you can join us 1-888-477-9499, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do have some more sounds, but let me first get Kristen from Villanova to join us. And Kristen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you. Yes, other than affecting a patient's sleep, my question is whether you've researched other sounds that are negative and whether they've had an actual impact on patient outcomes. And I think of things like hearing the sound of other patients moaning or crying or vomiting, for example,
yes. Well, I'd be curious to you, Bonku. I mean, these are the human sounds in hospitals as well, the sounds of distress and pain and suffering.
There's definitely been research out there showing that the suffering of other humans and hearing those noises is definitely stressful for patients. But I also think that this is a great research opportunity, that this field needs more research into understand how our acoustic environments, sonic environments in hospitals actually impact patient outcomes. And there's an opportunity there to redesign these environments to improve rest. There's this whole field called evidence-based design. And there was a famous study in the 1980s where if patients had a view of nature from their hospital room, that they actually required less pain medications and were discharged from the patients from the hospitals faster.
Oh, interesting.
So, and I think sound, the design of sound, can have an equally impactful outcome on patients.
You mentioned rest several times. Is it that the noise of a hospital just makes it hard for a patient to rest? Is that what it is, that they're interrupted all the time?
Incredibly difficult for any of us who have spent time in hospitals, either were a patient or a caregiver or a spouse or a parent, know that hospitals are so noisy, especially at night. I've never been into a hospital where it's quiet like a, and we think of other, I think it's a cultural thing. You know, if you think of other institutions like libraries, churches, synagogues, museums, you're not going to be speaking loud. You're going to be in a hushed voice because culturally, when we go into those institutions or the spaces, we know to be quiet.
Right.
Hospitals, not the same.
Well, and different things happening in hospitals than there are in libraries, that should be said. Let me play a couple of more tones for our listeners. The first one is called a tritone. It's a dissonant tritone chord. We're going to hear it a couple of times, and then we're going to listen to a harmonious chord progression. And Danny, then we're going to give you a chance to respond. Let's start with the dissonant tritone chord. Again, hearing that three times. Now we're going to hear a harmonious chord progression again three times. All right, Danny, take that apart for us. What are we hearing? And what is the, I mean, I hear it going up and I hear it going down. What are we hearing?
Well, in the first one, the tritone, similar exercise where I can play that progression, the tritone, in a room full of people and say, what's the first emotion you think of? What's the first message that comes to mind? And everyone's, uh-oh, error, you know, no. It's ubiquitous. It's consistent. And that's just our conditioning to that interval is pretty much universal that it says error. Imagine that you're sending an email on your computer and you press the send button. And what you hear is, ba-bum.
Uh-oh.
It didn't go through. Something didn't work. And in contrast, the what we call a 5-1 progression or a dominant to tonic progression, our ears are very attuned and accustomed to hearing that as all done or complete or success. And I could play those progressions on any instrument, on electronic devices. I could play it in very high pitches. I could play it in low tones, and you tend to get the same response from people. And it's to kind of put into stark contrast how simple and how intuitive sound can be when you just when applied right. So the tritone says error. Nobody really questions that. It's intuitive. It's immediate. The 5-1 progression, we accomplish something. We're done.
Oh.
And so it's just an isolated example of two very opposite effects.
Two very opposite effects. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to take those ideas, Banku, and to apply it either to an ER or to a hospital setting.
I think what Danny's talking about is this sonification of data, that we get all this data from our monitoring devices, and yet by the sound only alerts us that there's something wrong. Sound can do so much more, as Danny demonstrated, that if you change the soundtrack of these noises, that just by listening to it, you can tell if a patient's oxygen saturation is low, if they have an arrhythmia, if the IV pump is stopped, if the ventilator machine is turned off. So if we have this universality of the language of devices, just by listening to the noise, that we can understand what's going on with the patient in real time.
We're almost out of time here. We have Kate. I'll just read Kate's question. I'm sorry, Kate, I can't get you on the air. She says, 20 years ago, many family members were in the hospital, noticed the wear and tear of noises. Why is making this reform so long? Is there a short answer to that, Banku?
The short answer is that sound can be a powerful design tool to make patients have better outcomes, that they can rest in hospitals, and also for us clinicians to make less errors because we're not getting disrupted.
Let me play one more sound, and this has nothing to do with the hospital. Danny Van, this is really, it comes from Man-Made Music's electric car project with Nissan, making sure that electric cars, which are notoriously quiet, giving them some kind of humane sound. Let's give it a listen. I'll give you a chance to talk about it.
Sure.
So is that the sound of cars in the future, Danny?
Probably. I mean, something like that. I mean, the technology is changing, and this is a good thing that, in my opinion, that the internal combustion engine is going to be going away and be replaced with electric vehicles. And so you think about the Harley-Davidson example, the patata, the throatiness and the presence of that. When you take that away, you have a couple of things. You have a safety risk. I think we've all seen or experienced the Prius, you know, creeping up on us, and because it doesn't make any sound, there's an actual public safety hazard to electric vehicles. So there are regulations that are being put in place that say it needs to make sound between something like 0 and 30 kilometers per hour. But it also becomes a design opportunity to create something that's going to speak something about the product, tell you something about what's coming at you. And so designing the sound for Nissan was an interesting challenge for both those angles.
Well, I appreciate Danny Venn. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Mm-hmm. And loved being here.
Loved having you as well. She's EVP, creative and lead producer at Man Made Music. And Dr. Banku, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And he's an ER physician here in Philadelphia, also director of the Health Design Lab at Thomas Jefferson University. And we've got Yoko Sen waiting in the wings, talking more about the sounds of hospitals. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about creating healthier-sounding hospitals. Our guest Yoko Sen is in the forefront of this movement. After being hospitalized a few years ago, she heard firsthand the stress-inducing noises in the ER and the hospital and decided to work on composing a healthier, more healing sound environment as founder of Sen Sound. She's an ambient electronic musician, former fellow at the Halcyon Incubator, citizen artist fellow at the Kennedy Center, joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Yoko Sen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So let's go back to when you were in the hospital. What struck you about those sounds as you were hospitalized?
Yeah, so, you know, as a musician, I'm sensitive to sound. So, I mean, first, it's just really loud and chaotic. It's just noisy. So I was surprised by that. And you know, I grew up studying piano as a child, so I hear almost any sound as a musical note. Hmm. So in my ear, there was this cardiac monitor that was like a note of C, and there was some Bedford alarm in distance, and that was high-pitched F sharp, and they were beeping together. And you were just talking about tritone
yes.
a few minutes ago.
Yes.
And it's exactly that diminished fifth tritone sounding. And I was kind of shocked that, you know, that's tritone is something that in medieval time people thought it's so disturbing. It was banned by churches to play, and that's what we could be hearing in hospitals today. So I was just shocked, like, why does it have to be this way? So that's kind of my intro to that experience.
Sure. In fact, you did a TED Talk where you talked about this kind of devil in music, the idea that the cardiac monitor is in competition with the various other alarms and monitors that are going on in a hospital. You also quoted Florence Nightingale in that TED Talk, talking about unnecessary noise is the cruelest sound of care. Of course, this was more than 100 years ago when hospitals were a much different sounding environment, probably a lot quieter. What is your goal in creating a more humane kind of sound environment in a hospital?
My personal goal is to be able to be the bridge for patients and clinicians who are in those hospital space almost every day and find a way to really have their experience, their perspective to be the guiding force for the design of the future soundscape.
And what do they tell you? What do they say that they want besides probably less noise? But what do they want in their environment?
So I think the first important thing is everybody's different. So it's easy to kind of generalize. Oh, like, for instance, there is a patient satisfaction survey. There is a questionnaire called Quiet at Night. So if patients report that the area around their room is always quiet, then hospital gets scored and gets reimbursement. However, there are many patients who share that they are afraid of things being always quiet at night.
Oh, so interesting. That's so interesting. How do you interpret that?
So, you know, I kind of observe, I'm an introverted person and I prefer silence. When I relax at home, I like to be quiet. But my husband, on the other hand, always likes to have radio and NPR and podcast. He just needs to have some sound around. So for me, healing environment is something quiet. But for somebody like my husband, he needs some sound around. Otherwise, he feels more disturbed by silence. So there is no sort of a one solution fit all. Although definitely we could make a lot of effort on reducing unnecessary noise that's around today.
Absolutely. And I do want to play something that you created, but let me just ask you, because we talked about this quite a bit with our previous guests about alarm fatigue, the fact that alarms in hospitals go off, you know, multiple times during a day, and many of them really are not a matter of life and death, but nonetheless, everyone's on alert because they feel the need to respond. Or they get so inured to the sound, they don't respond at all. I'm curious about your thoughts.
Right. So there is a study at Johns Hopkins University that the average number of alarms we hear per patient per day is 350.
350.
350. It's according to one study. And among those 350, do you have any guess, like, how the percentage of alarms that are false positive or clinically insignificant?
Well, I actually cheated by doing my homework, so I know the answer to that. Between 85 and 99%,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a very stressful environment because, you know, you still cannot miss that 1% that you're not supposed to miss, and it's a life or death situation. It's an extremely stressful situation for clinicians.
Let me play just a small clip, about 30 seconds, from your Send Sounds Tranquility Room. This is something that you composed, a sound environment that could be used in a hospital. Now, that sounds very meditative. What was your thinking behind that sound?
So I wanted to clarify that this particular piece of music is not necessary for the sort of a patient areas, but this was specifically for this space we designed, co-created with Johns Hopkins Sibley Memorial Hospital, and it's a tranquility room for staff members, for hospital staff to take a respite from all the sensory overload. And this is one of the music pieces that we used in the space as a way to get feedback from staff members, how they respond to different types of music, different type of sound. In terms of the actual soundscape and sound in the patient area, we are still in the middle of research, and I would be a lot more careful in terms of sort of a putting music. And earlier, you were having a discussion about nature sound and how nature is something that, you know, visually there's a study that if the window is facing the nature, people get to hear better. And I do believe that there could be a same effect with the sound. But when it comes to patient area, I would move very slowly, starting with something like nature sound or white noise, as you were discussing earlier.
I'm curious then about the response of medical staff then to this tranquility room. Did they find tranquility in that room? It's hard to imagine not, to be perfectly honest with you.
Right. So in the case of Sibley Memorial Hospital, we are actively tracking the usage of that space. And many hospitals actually try to create this staff break room that's more soothing. And oftentimes people stop using after several months. But in the case of Sibley, people continue to use this room quite actively, and we get very positive feedback. And I think there are a few different reasons for that, but yeah.
What are some of those different reasons?
So when we created the space, we made sure that the community of staff members, they were involved in every step of the way as we designed the space in collaboration with Gensler, that's an architecture company. So nurses, physicians, hospital staff, their view became a guiding force of the design of the space. We also paid meticulous attention on the sensory experience, sound being number one. There's a dim light, there is a scent, there is a tea. So I think paying attention to senses is a very important element also.
And that's Yoko Sen. She's an ambient electronic musician and founder of Sen Sound. That's a social enterprise to reimagine the sound environment in hospitals. And she's worked with a number of hospitals, Johns Hopkins, Sibley Memorial Hospital, also with Kaiser Permanente, among others. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Going back to your TED Talk, one of the other things that you put out there, which I thought was interesting and provocative, which is asking people what is the last sound that they want to hear before they die. And that sounds, you know, rather emotional and potentially tragic, but I think it is very provocative and leads to some very interesting, I think, thinking and ideas. We actually asked some of the staffers here at WHYY, including Al Banks, John Ahrens, Taylor Allen, Xavier Lopez, Jimena Conde, asked them that question, and this is what they said.
The sound of nature, babbling brook, birds, wind, birds chirping.
Definitely would be music. Maybe the most appropriate song would be Forget Me Nots by Patrice Rushen, because, you know, forget me not, you know?
I would really like to hear a storm or rain. I feel like I should at least go to sleep, you know what I mean?
The sound of waves. I come from a small town in South America right by the ocean, and that sounds lovely.
This is a little morbid, but the voice of my mom. Yeah.
As you can tell, tapped in some very interesting emotions there. A Facebook comment from Kathy says, I want my last sound to be my husband's voice. Why were you interested in this question, Yoko-san?
Those voices you recorded, they are amazing. So it's coming from first my own personal experience that when I was in hospitals as a patient, I used to wonder Some people say hearing is the last sense to go when we die. So what is the last sound I get to hear? And I thought about the tritone of all the cacophony of beeps. Right. And I just thought, it's so tragic that, you know, that's the last sensation I get to have on this, you know, lifetime. At the same time, you know, in design thinking, so Dr. Bonku was talking about, you know, human-centered design. One of the things we talk about is to learn from extreme scenarios and extreme cases. And in healthcare, one of the extreme scenarios is the end of life. Mm. And I think there are a lot of insights that we could learn. By focusing on that particular moment of a hospital.
Well, and of course I have to ask you, because you raised the question and it got me thinking, frankly, and my first thought was the sound of children at a playground. It's a sound I've loved my whole life, but I also have a grandson who's learning to talk, so I actually decided to shift my answer, which is that that would be hearing him trying to muddle through the English language would be the last sound that I would want to hear. So, Yoko-san, what would be the last sound you would want to hear?
The last sound I like to hear is my husband's fart.
Your husband's what?
My husband's fart.
Did you say F-A-R-T?
Yes.
All right, you have to explain yourself. Go ahead.
Well,
I have to say, I didn't expect you to say that, but since you did, go ahead.
Well, you know, it could mean a few things. That
it could.
Selfishly, my husband is still healthy and I get to be the one to go before him.
Right.
It's also kind of a reminder of our ordinary life, which is nice. It's sort of a reminder of our life together because he farts a lot and he has a very melodic fart.
Does he know you're talking about him on the radio today?
Yeah, I hope not.
But it's such a, I mean, it's so provocative, and obviously the smell and the sound, but there's nothing more human in a certain kind of way, but also that it's the both the sort of public and private nature of it, if you know what I mean.
Right. So in fact, you know, in healthcare, this notion of advanced care planning is a big issue that, and many of us are not ready to be asked, you know, how would you like your end of life to be? That's just too heavy for many of us. But if we rephrase that question as what's the last sound you like to hear, mm-hmm. almost as a playful, lighthearted invitation, then I am hearing from people that people are using this particular question as sort of a gateway question to more heavier conversations. I also hear from people who saw my talk 2 years ago and they come up to me, that one concept of last sound completely changed the way I took care of my father who passed several months ago. People just bring amazing stories. So I think that this concept kind of started to have a life of its own. Yeah.
Well, Yoko-san, what a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. That's Yoko-san, ambient electronic musician, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And we did post this question on our Facebook page yesterday about the last sound that you want to hear. And you can certainly carry on that conversation. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.